I'm happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Katie Della Maggiore. She is director and producer of the documentary Brooklyn Castle, which opens this Friday at the CCA Cinematheque here in Santa Fe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Hi, thank you.
So this is a fascinating, I just love this documentary. It's about a Brooklyn public junior high school, IS 318, which basically produces the nation's best chess players. What is going on there?
Yeah, I mean, that was the question that I had when I found out that fact as well. I had read an article in the New York Times about a talented young chess player who went to a high school in Brooklyn that I was familiar with. And at first I thought that that might be an interesting angle for a documentary. But I did some digging and actually found out that there was a junior high school that actually had won more national chess championships than any other school in the nation. And they were still a little under the radar, unlike this high school that had been written up about, had been written up in the newspaper. And so it kind of seemed like an undiscovered story that was worth telling. And so I went to check out the junior high school one day before work. I was kind of just working a day job at the time as a TV producer. And I went there one day before work. And what I found immediately was a culture of success at the school that was kind of on immediate display when you walk into the school. So like as soon as you walk in, there's trophies, hundreds of trophies and banners like covering the hallways, celebrating the success of this chess team, which, you know, is kind of unexpected. Usually when you walk into a school, especially a middle school, you know, you expect to see the sports teams, but not necessarily the chess team. And so I think that partly has a lot to do with it, the fact that the school really does support the chess program and really does celebrate it. And obviously beyond that, you know, there would be no chess program without the two dedicated teachers, the teacher and the assistant principal that are featured in the movie. And so there's the chess teacher, Elizabeth Vickery. She's really the brains behind the operation, and she's the one who really can, you know, take the kids and inspire them to want to learn chess, and not only learn chess, but then actually become really good at it. And then John Galvin, the assistant principal, handles kind of all the administration, all the administrative kind of tasks that, you know, keep this chess program alive. And obviously that's in the midst of really bad budget cuts at the school. So he's has a big challenge throughout the film of kind of trying to figure out a way to keep this program funded even as more money is cut from it. So, you know, I think that, like, you know, there is no secret recipe of what makes this team so special, but I think it's obviously a combination of what's needed at all schools, or, you know, what all after-school programs need, which is support from the administration and really dedicated and passionate instructors. And I think with those two things, you know, you can probably take any kind of program like chess and have it be as special as the one at 318.
So I love this, how in this school, IS 318, I mean, you think about the sort of American cliche of the junior high schools and high schools where the jocks are respected. In this school, it seems like the chess players are the rock stars of the school.
Yes, they are. I mean, the chess team at 318 definitely shatters some stereotypes of what you expect chess players or young chess players to be like. I mean, I think there are definitely stereotypes out there about chess, that the chess team is often nerdy, antisocial, that they're kind of a weird, quirky bunch. And, you know, certainly that exists. Why not? But at 318, you know, I mean, I think there's such a diverse group of kids that play chess, that there's lots of kids on the chess team, like Pobo, who's one of the stars of our film, who is, like, one of the most charismatic, outgoing, kind of popular kids you'll meet. And, you know, I think that's great that you can see that, you know, that a game like chess that might be seen as kind of like a nerdy sport when you're 10 or 11 years old, in fact, our movie kind of shows people that it's not. You know what I mean? That, like, any kind of kid can play chess. And, there really aren't any, that all the stereotypes that you think are associated with it are actually shattered in at 318 and in the movie.
Totally. And one of them is this, I mean, there's so many extraordinary people in the film, but one of them is this 13-year-old, at least when the film starts, African-American girl who is on track to become the first African-American female chess master. And all the stereotypes that we have about chess being a guy thing or being a white or now an Asian thing, I mean, this movie just busts them all.
Yeah, I mean, we were so excited to meet Rochelle when we first started shooting, and she told us that she was on track to potentially become a master. And if she became master, she would be the first female African-American woman to become a chess master. And so we were like, wow, what an amazing goal. You know what I mean? To be the first at anything is pretty awesome. And so, you know, yeah, just that right there. I mean, being a woman, being a black woman at her age, you know, all of these things, like you said, that people don't associate with chess for whatever reason. And it was so nice to be able to show people, you know, that for chess, you know, it's funny, like the game of chess really just comes down to like your brain and your opponent's brain. And it's one of those sports where everything else is kind of can be left off the board. It doesn't matter where you're from or how much money you have, how old you are, what sex you are. You know, if you can outsmart your opponent, then you could win. And so I think that that's kind of a really wonderful lesson for people to learn, you know, in watching the film.
Now, is chess sex segregated?
Mm-mm. No, all the kids play together. So, you know, when they travel in tournaments, when they travel to compete in tournaments, all of the girls and all of the guys compete against each other. Although, you know, there are some special tournaments that are like for girls only, you know, but for the main tournaments, it's all mixed. But, you know, like for certain sports, you know, like say like golf or other sports, you know, you can compete in like a girls only event. And so there are some of those that Rochelle competes in, but she beats all the boys. I mean, when she's number one at her school, because she's beaten all of the boys in her class, and most of the chess team is made up of boys.
Now, let's talk about who these kids are and what their families are like. It seems like there's a lot of children of immigrants who are chess players in this school.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's just kind of comes with the territory of the neighborhood that we shot in. You know, the neighborhood is made up of a lot of immigrant families, and the school itself is predominantly made up of Hispanic, African-American, Asian families. And so it's no surprise that the chess team is a pretty mixed bunch. I think that John Galvin, the assistant principal, told me once that like something like 20 different ethnicities were represented on the chess team at a certain given time. He called it like the UN of chess, like his chess team. So one of the kids in our film, Alexis, his family is from Paraguay. And, you know, they came to America, as he said, you know, in search of the American dream and really wanting to just have a better life for him. And, you know, you see in the film about how he uses chess or sees chess kind of as another way to further his life goals. You know, it's just like one more way that he can do better in school and ultimately get into a good college, get a good job, and kind of become, you know, the young man that he knows he can become and that he'd like to become to make his parents proud.
It's really a beautiful thing to watch, and it's sort of, I was watching it and thinking, people who are making noise about being anti-immigrant, whatever that even means, really should watch this movie.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you, yeah.
Yeah.
I think, you know, until you go into someone's home, it's really easy to judge, right? Until you can go into someone's home and actually see what's going on there. And I think that's like the wonderful thing about documentaries in general is it kind of like peels back the veil a little bit. And you know, it's really easy to just kind of make broad stroke judgments about people sometimes. But then until you're actually like inside their home and seeing, it, for example, in the example of Alexis, like how hard his family works and how hard he's working. You know, who would not want him to have access to every opportunity, you know, as a son of an immigrant? Who could watch this film and say, no, Alexis doesn't deserve to have every opportunity that's available to him? And that's kind of what we're hoping people think when they see the film.
Well, and also, who could watch this film and not realize that these people are the movers, shakers, and leaders of the next generation?
Well, exactly. Yeah, that someone like Alexis and Pobo, whose Pobo's parents are from Nigeria, you know, Pobo is going to do great things one day. And, yeah, I mean, I definitely witnessed that going, you know, and meeting the families, you know, going into neighborhoods that people might write off or, you know, obviously with all the talk now about entitlements, right, and how much should we be contributing to schools, how much should we be contributing to families out of tax dollars. And then you kind of see programs like that at work, whether it be in schools or, you know, in public housing, and you kind of see, like, kids that are thriving, and you think, you know, these are the kids that are going to be our future. And if you keep taking away from them, then can you expect them to succeed, you know? It just doesn't make any sense.
These kids are under a lot of pressure. I mean, talk about the pressure of being a competitive chess player.
Yeah, I mean, the kids are under pressure, but I have to say that a lot of the pressure is just kind of internal pressure that they put on themselves, you know? I mean, obviously, it's an intense sport like any other, and the kids want to win. I mean, they want to win because they're good. And when you become the kind of the best, you want to stay there. And so I think it's a good amount of pressure that they're under, because a lot of it comes from inside. You know what I mean? It's not necessarily pressure that's put on them from their parents or their coaches or teachers. I mean, certainly the coaches and teachers want the team to win. But, you know, you see in the film how Elizabeth Vickery, the teacher, she says time and time again that, you know, the lesson is not from winning. You know, the biggest lessons often come from losing and then figuring out why you lost. And so it's not just like they're just pushing the kids to win and that's the point of the whole thing. The point is kind of the journey that they take on the chessboard and kind of how they become better thinkers by becoming good chess players. And if they and they happen to win because of that, all the better.
Right.
Yeah, it's not all about winning, though.
One of the things that it really points out is the utter and complete folly in cutting taxes and cutting money from school programs. Because when you watch this documentary, you think these are kids who are on a path to success. That path comes through their after-school activity, chess. You cut that out, and the harm that is done is uncountable.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense, does it?
It really doesn't.
It seems like I said, you know, there is a lot of pressure in general. I think, you know, we hear all this, kids are constantly hearing about how, you know, students in the United States are behind and we're not reaching the goals we should be like other countries. And, you know, everyone wants to prepare kids for, you know, the 21st century. And then it's like, okay, well, we're not going to give you the tools that you need to do that. Because obviously the tools to do that aren't just reading and math. You know what I mean? It's not just standardized tests that make you a well-rounded, kind of successful, happy adult. The things that do that are often, you know, the experiences you have after 3 o'clock too. You know, it's the experiences
right,
of being part of a program, being part of a team, being able to explore kind of your interests and your passions, and, you know, having access to programs like that is really important. And, you know, especially for kids who don't necessarily have parents who can afford to send them to, you know, kind of some extracurricular activities outside of school. You know, I mean, if schools don't offer after school programs or community centers don't offer after school programs and the parents can't afford it, then, like, what are the kids doing when they get home at 3 o'clock, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
It's really something that we started to feel really strongly about when we started making, you know, we didn't go into the film even expecting for that to be an issue because the school hadn't even gotten hit with their budget cut when we first started shooting. But once they did, it became really clear to us how important this issue was, and that it was happening at schools all across the country, and that we really hope that the film can shine a light on that.
Very much so. And it also shines the light on the fact that while there's so much work that is offloaded onto individuals and onto parents that used to be taken care of by the school, like here in Santa Fe, you see all these lists of school supplies that parents are supposed to buy for their children, which used to be supplied by the school for their children, art supplies and things like that. And what you have now is you actually have taxation being offloaded onto parents and teachers and students in the form of making them fundraise for things that really should be part of the school curriculum, like being able to travel for chess tournaments.
Yeah, I mean, I firmly believe that. I mean, these programs are part of a full education. And when budgets are cut, or when people are looking at how to trim budgets, because obviously as the economy worsens, you know, as it has worsened over the years, you know, that all trickles down from the federal to the state level down to the school districts. And then, you know, people have budgets in front of them, well-meaning, you know, Department of Education officials, you know, have to cut their budgets. But where do they cut from? You know, they're looking at a line item and it's like, well, we can't cut reading, we can't cut math, you know, we can't cut more teachers. And so the first thing to go are the things that are seen as extras. And I think, I don't have a solution necessarily for fixing the economy at the moment, but I think that if you could at least start to not see these programs as extras, then perhaps they wouldn't be so easily cut, you know, when budgets are tight, that perhaps schools and districts could be a little bit more creative of how to keep these programs going, you know? And so that way the weight of it doesn't fall on the parents and the students to have to fundraise to keep the programs going.
Now, you did a great job filming the chess tournaments, which is basically a bunch of kids sitting around and staring at a board. It is not exactly high drama.
Exactly. Yeah, we knew going into this that we would have to figure out a way to make chess seem exciting, because like you said, from the outside, if you were to walk into a chess tournament, it would be a room of, you know, 1,000 kids sitting in silence, staring intently at each other. And you think, great, what's happening? Doesn't really make for, like, exciting movie making. So we, you know, definitely decided that we would approach the chess play in as a dynamic way as possible. And, my husband Nelson, who's the editor on the film and producer, and my brother Brian, who's the cinematographer and a producer on the film, they both have a fair amount of experience working in sports production and like baseball and football and basketball. And so we really wanted to kind of like treat the footage and treat the chess element in like the way you might see any other sport treated on TV, kind of with that same intensity. And I think that the way we did that was maybe not focusing on the X's and O's of how you play chess, because that's not something anyone's going to understand if they don't play chess, but really focusing on kind of like the emotions of it, because I think that that's what really everybody can relate to, kind of the, you know, the sweat on the eyebrow and the tapping foot and, you know, the tears afterwards or the celebration afterwards, you know, kind of those emotional ups and downs that come with really any competitive sport.
Right, right. There's no slow motion of the great move or something like
that. Yeah, I mean, no one's going to care why, you know, the king moved to C4. Like, none of that stuff we thought would matter, or even it really wouldn't matter to anybody. But with some really fantastic music, you know, we're also able to at least make the chess play that we do show, along with, like I said, kind of the emotional reactions of the kids, where you can really feel like you were watching something happen. Even if you didn't know what was happening, we wanted people to kind of feel like, for that quick moment, that they were right there kind of on the board with Alexis, like as he was thinking about what to do next.
Now, do we know what happens to kids who were chess champions in junior high and high school? Do we know what happens to them to like 10, 15 years later?
You mean like personally or like in school or?
Well, like what, so you've got kids who 10, 15 years ago were champion chess players. What do they do with their lives?
I mean, I don't know. That's a good question. I don't. There's not a whole lot of opportunity out there to become a professional chess player. You know, it's just not really a career. I mean, there are definitely people who do that. But I think the majority of people who play chess don't become professional chess players.
No.
And John Galvin, you know, and Elizabeth Vickery say that, you know, that that's not the goal of the program at 318 is to make turn the kids into professional chess players. And so I think the majority of people don't, but they continue playing chess throughout their lives and hopefully find some way to parlay that chess success into success in their professional life, you know, which I think definitely does happen.
Well, that's what I was wondering. I mean, if you have that kind of mastery of focus and strategy and kind of long-term thinking, I would think that would be able to translate itself into all kinds of other professions, whether it be law or business or medicine or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have the stats on it, but I mean, I've definitely read and have been told like lots of anecdotal stories of, you know, CEOs of major corporations that play chess. You know, very successful people on Wall Street, you know, I mean, there's always like these stories, you kind of hear sometimes people come out of the chess closet and you find out that some of like the most successful people are actually, you know, at chess players, you know, like a Bill Gates or something like that.
Right.
I think there definitely are a lot of parallels. You know, you don't have to be a genius to play chess, and not every chess player is a brilliant business person or a brilliant artist, but certainly I think that for the kids that work hard, that play chess, for whatever it is that they want to do in life, the chess will help that. You know, it will help them do that. Now, I mean, the chess isn't going to turn someone who's not motivated all of a sudden into a motivated person, but, you know, for the kids that you know, have a goal and something that they want to do in their life, with like a lot of the kids in the film do, the chess is just kind of like a great motor to kind of keep that going. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. What are your hopes for this film in terms of what kind of dialogue it can create?
Well, I think, you know, you brought up a lot of it already so far. I think that, you know, the dialogue that we wanted to create is kind of at first, you know, breaking the stereotypes of what you might consider a chess player to be. I mean, I think in general, you know, that's kind of a great conversation to have, for kids to have, you know, to even watch the film, and for kids to be able to identify with the players in some different ways and identify with their struggles and their hopes and their dreams and their goals. So we really want the film to screen in schools eventually and inspire kids to kind of think about their own goals and how they can achieve them, even if it seems like something that maybe is not the norm or not something that they've been told maybe that they're good at. And then, you know, for, you know, on a much larger scale, I would love for this film to change the way people perceive after school programs, you know, for people to start to not see them as extras anymore. And if we can make a difference in that way, you know, in some systematic way, where like now schools can get more funding for after school programs, you know, down the line, if we can make a bigger change in that way, you know, in Washington, you know, and bring this film and screen it on Capitol Hill and kind of be part of the conversation as lawmakers are talking about the fiscal cliff and talking about reauthorizing No Child Left Behind. And, you know, I mean, there's just so much debate around public education that it would be nice if after-school programs could be a part of that debate, and that, you know, a film like Broken Castle can help people see them in a different way.
Are you a chess player yourself?
No, I'm not. I mean, I can play now. I learned how to play by making the movie, but I still wouldn't call myself a chess player.
Yeah, it's something that I think is... how shall I say, very, very admirable. I played as a kid, and I realized it was over my head and stopped at a certain point, and it just makes one admire the kids in the film all the more.
Yeah, every now and then, you know, my husband and I will sit down and maybe try to start a game. But, I don't know, it hasn't stuck the way it has for the kids in the film. I think maybe I spend too much time shooting a movie about chess to actually become a chess player.
Katie Della Maggiore is director and producer of the documentary Brooklyn Castle. You can find out more about the film at brooklyncastle.com. And you can also go to it this weekend starting Friday at the CCA Cinematheque here in Santa Fe. For more information, ccasantafe.org. And you can call 505-982-1338. Katie, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you for having me.